Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is all of it. Social distancing means we're living in a world of virtual things, virtual museums, virtual hangouts, and now even virtual libraries. The Internet Archive, home of hundreds of thousands of videos, songs, and documents from far back as 1900, now has a new lending policy where you can borrow thousands of books online, no waitlist necessary. It's called the National Emergency Library. On one hand, it's making books available for students and researchers during the pandemic. On the other hand, is the material theirs to give away? And is free distribution of books online even legal? My guest is Timothy B. Lee, a tech writer for Ars Technica and formerly at Vox.com and The Washington Post. His most recent piece, An Online Library is Venturing into Uncharted Legal Waters, covers this debate and is featured in Wired. Timothy, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Let's get some basics down. What is the Internet Archive?
The Internet Archive is an online library. It's probably best known for running the Internet's Wayback Machine. If you want to know what a particular website looked like 5 or 10 or 15 years ago, they have a search engine where you can see cached copies. But they've also, for about a decade, they've had a book scanning project where they scanned more than a million books now. I think they've got 1.4 million books under copyright and a bunch more in the public domain, and offered those for people to access online.
So who runs it? Is it a nonprofit?
Yes, it's a nonprofit organization, philanthropically supported, I believe. It's based in California.
And when did it start?
The organization was started by a guy named Brewster Kahle, who was a dot-com entrepreneur in the 1990s, and he was one of the first people to realize that you could kind of download the whole Internet, download all the web pages. And so he started with this Wayback Machine. He started making copies of a bunch of web pages. But he really has a broader vision, I think, of kind of being a universal Internet library for all types of media. He also does videos and audio files and so forth.
So what was its pre-pandemic policy?
So before the pandemic, what I think they were trying to do is really mimic the behavior of a physical library. So they have a warehouse full of books that various people have donated to them or that they've purchased. They've scanned them all, and then they had a checkout policy where you could go to the website, you could get an account, and then if nobody else had checked out a particular book, you could quote-unquote check it out, meaning download a time-limited copy, either to look at it in a web browser or in an e-reader, and you could read it, and then when you were done, you would check it back into the library, and it would become available to everybody else. But there were limits. Only if they only had three copies of the book in their warehouse, only three people could read the book at the same time.
So what changed in the policy? I alluded to it in the intro, but if you could flesh that out.
Yeah, so they just removed that that waitlisting requirement. So if before you could only have three people reading the book at a time, now you could have 30 or 300 or 1,000 people reading the book at the same time.
So is this an indefinite thing? Was this just for this period of time?
Yeah, so they say that this new policy will be in place until June 30th or until the pandemic emergency ends, whichever is later. And they're still limited to the number of books somebody can check out and require you to renew them after 2 weeks if you're still reading them.
Now, what legal issues does this bring up?
Well, so at a basic level, copyright law reserves to copyright holders, which will be authors or publishers, the right to reproduce books. And so a lot of publishers and authors have said this is just not consistent with copyright law. You needed to get permission from us, and you haven't gotten permission. The Internet Archive hasn't been super specific about their legal arguments, but there's a doctrine called fair use that allows for certain types of uses of copyrighted works. For example, as a journalist, if I'm writing about a book and I want to quote a sentence or two from the book, I can do that without getting permission from the author under fair use. And I would guess, I haven't actually gotten the Internet Archive to comment to me about what their legal theory is, but I guess they would argue that fair use applies in this case.
So libraries, they've loaned out PDFs and e-books to users before. What makes this policy different?
Well, the difference is that it's not with the permission of two things. One is they don't have the permission of the copyright holders. So in many cases, if you check out an ebook from a library, what you are doing is you're getting a library an ebook that was created by the publisher specifically for that use, and often the library is paying the publisher, some small amount of money for each checkout, and so that's all kind of within the copyright system. In this case, they're not paying the publishers anything beyond if they bought the book from the publisher originally, but they're not paying anything beyond that. And in addition to that, as I said before, they are not limiting the number of copies that can be checked out. There's another project being run by some university libraries that is doing the same approach, but they've kept the limit on the number of copies in place. So they're only lending out as many copies as they have, and they're only lending it to members of their individual university communities.
My guest is Timothy B. Lee. He's tech writer for Ars Technica. He wrote a piece called "An Online Library is Venturing into Uncharted Legal Waters." Many authors were not happy about this at all. The Authors Guild put out a lengthy, a blistering statement. I'm going to read part of it. "With mean writing incomes of only $20,000 a year prior to the crisis, authors like others are now struggling all the more. From canceled book tours and loss of freelance work, income supplementing jobs and speaking engagement, and now they're supposed to swallow this new pill, which robs them of their rights to introduce their books to digital formats, as many hundreds of middle-list authors do when their books go out of print, and which all but guarantees that the author's incomes and publisher revenues will decline even further." How has the internet library, online library, responded to the authors?
So I think they've really emphasized the nature of the pandemic emergency. What they've really pointed out is that there's a lot of libraries closed, and so there are a lot of physical books out there on the shelves of libraries all over the country that normally you'd be able to go to your local library and check that book out and read it. Now you're not able to do that. And so they've really positioned this as an alternative to that, that largely they're giving people access to books they would have had access to anyway, absent the pandemic. But they really have not gotten into the kind of legal weeds of, like, you know, why do they think this is legal under copyright law?
Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they made a concession that authors can opt out.
Yes, that's right. That's another limitation. This was true when they were limiting the number of copies, and it's true now. So yes, if you're an author or a publisher and you really don't like your books being included in this library, I believe you can fill out a form or send them an email and request that your book be removed.
It's sort of, when I read that, I thought, don't they kind of make the argument for the authors and the publishers because they kind of have to ask for permission? Doesn't it mean it's somebody else's?
I think you could argue that. I mean, I think the way they would put it is that there may be some authors out there who actually like having their books available that, you know, that maybe don't think they're going to lose that many sales, but, like, you know, just most authors want their work to be read. And so I think they would say that this is a way of giving authors the option. I mean, the problem is, if you could imagine them doing the opposite, where they go around and try to get permission from every author. But it's really difficult, especially if you have a million books. It would take a long time and take a lot of resources to do that. So they're kind of flipping it around and having the authors, you know, contact them, which, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The authors and publishers don't really think that's sufficient in many cases.
My guest is Timothy Lee. His piece is called "An Online Library is Venturing into Uncharted Legal Waters." Now, the legal waters have been tested here before when Google decided it was going to just make all books available. What happened in 2005 with Google? Can you give us an overview of what happened with that case?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there were kind of two phases to the Google case. Google's initial plan was, you know, they're a search company, and so you can search the web using their tools, and they wanted to do the same thing with books. They wanted to build a book search engine where if you wanted to search not just the title of the book but the text inside the book, you'd be able to go to Google and do that. And so they started scanning books the same way that they, you know, scrape the contents of web pages, and started building a massive database of book pages, but they weren't offering the full text of the books to the public. All they would offer is you could search, and then they would show a small snippet, a couple of sentences from the book in the search results. But the authors and publishers groups, the Authors Guild and the American Association of Publishers, were not happy about that, and they sued Google. And there was this big lawsuit that stretched out for years and years. And what happened was they ended up reaching a possible settlement where it was a class action. So the plaintiffs represented all publishers and authors in a pretty broad category. And they reached a settlement where Google would have gotten permission to begin offering books to the public in exchange for paying certain royalties to people. And that would have created an even more ambitious version of the library that the Internet Archive is now trying to create. However, it was nixed by a judge who felt that, among other problems, that this would essentially make Google a monopoly, because Google would have the permission to do this, but nobody else would be able to.
This whole thing reminds me of when music, digital music, started to be shared. Is this parallel at all?
Well, I think that's probably not a comparison that you'd want the Internet Archive would want to draw. I mean, if you go on file sharing networks, there definitely are people that you know, scan bootleg copies of popular books and share them online. I think that the Internet Archive and other libraries that have experimented with this kind of book scanning have taken steps to kind of make themselves seem more legitimate. So, you know, the Internet Archive does still limit. Put in technological measures in place, so you can't just download the book and keep it. There's digital rights management software that tries to prevent you from keeping a copy beyond a two-year limitation. So you're not getting permanent copies of the book. You're theoretically lending them out. Of course, sometimes those measures can be circumvented, and as you said before, like publishers and authors say, well, that still seems like copyright infringement. But I think they're at least trying to stay on the right side of the law.
The name of the piece is An Online Library is Venturing into Uncharted Legal Waters. It's by Timothy Lee. Timothy, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you for having me on.